Chapter 59.
Lysander. The Impaler. I am one of the tortured. The Gorgons, a handsome gold woman with a pert nose and a gecko of a grey, pour alcohol over my burn on the first day. Just getting acquainted, they say, as I scream. They inject something into my neck, and time does indeed slow down. The agony sustains itself for what feels like a week. Then it is gone, and the pain of my burn is omnipotent once more. The Gorgons ask about the Bellona blade they found on me, about my name, but if I give it to them, then what will they do with it? The Fear Knight is away, so it seems. Would they contact the Anihilo? Would Ajax intercept it and send a kill squad here to finish what he started, and Seneca left incomplete? I need the Fear Knight to return. I need his direct authority. My stomach feels inside out, it's so hungry. My hair has begun to fall out from radiation sickness. Soon all of us are bald. All of us are nauseous. Our bodies are naturally resistant to radiation, but with it floating in continuously from the Ladan, our DNA unwinds bit by bit. Soon the symptoms will worsen. The Elysian Knights and I talk intermittently as the days ebb and flow. I look for some sign of insanity in them to explain their allegiance to Darrow and the betrayal of their own colour, but I detect none, except for the zealotry in Alexandra and Drusilla. The rest seem only to be here because House Arcus, their patron, joined years ago. Drusilla speaks of the dream of Persephone, of helping the people, as if all low colours were paupers and slaves before the rising. It's a laugh. I've met reds and browns happier than most golds I know, and all of them with better lives than the greys who fed our military machine. But greys never broke under the hardship. Of all the colours, they've remained the most loyal to the society. Sometime in the morning, on what may be my fourth day with them, Ignatius and Drusilla are taken away. Ignatius is returned first, sheet-white, and holding three stumps where there used to be fingers. When Drusilla returns, she says nothing as she sobs into the stone. Any belief that I am a plant among the Arcosians disappears. The torture binds me to their pack, as I supposed it would. Conversation becomes scarce. Slowly Alexander draws in on himself, becoming dour and hopeless. It is all Drusilla can do to keep him drinking water and eating their gruel. My scheme begins to seem so foolish. There is nothing to be gained out of the misunderstanding that brought me here. I will die here, or I will risk telling my captors who I am and wait at their mercy for my enemies to decide my fate. I've resolved to tell them, when I am strung up on the chains for the fifth time, the time dilation drug is too much to bear, and even the mind's eye cannot spare me from its rigours. But Pert and Gecko, as I've taken to calling my torturers, disappear once I'm hoisted up. The cavern is dim and unadorned. Stalactites drip water into a shallow pool. Beside that is a chest full of torture devices. I hear footsteps behind me. A man breathing.
"Can you walk?" he asks,
his accent more Lunese than Ionian. I nod. A mag key unlatches the lock on my manacles.
"Follow me."
I follow the man out of the cavern to a main tunnel. To the left, past the prisoner's cavern, come the faint sounds of laughter and cooking. He leads me right into deeper tunnels until we come to a small cavern. It is his personal chamber. A thin thermofoam mattress with a field blanket serves as his bed. A small solar stove sits in a nook carved into the wall, along with several weapons and a long-range comm. A thin black haster hangs on the wall beside a filthy wolf pelt. A second nook is home to several dozen figurines carved from disparate stones. Beside it is a map of what looks like a cave system. I join him to sit on two small pads facing each other. Atlas Aura is a vaguely alien man. It has been years since I've seen him in the flesh. After the death of my parents, he was sent to the Rim to harry the Azkamani and the Kuiper. Whatever he did to displease my grandmother must have been grave. In his absence, she gifted his office to another. I am struck by how soulful he now seems. Was it the distant dark that did it, or was it the war he returned to find raging in his absence? Behind the sunburnt eyelids lurks an intense intellectual presence. He is masculine, like his son Ajax, but nowhere near as thick. He is taller and leaner than his brother Romulus, but less dramatic in posture. His eyes are wider and a clearer gold. A scar encircles his neck where his throat was once cut ear to ear. His long hair is black, shot with gold, and held back in a ponytail. I probe deeper with the mind's eye. 49 years of age, left-handed, limp originating from the left knee, multiple hidden knives in his moth-coloured light armour, lack of ego projection, indicating absence of insecurity in body and deeds. Sociopathy? Delusions of heroism? No, that's usually supported by zeal. Why so distant? Extremely lonely, tired, bored, distracted, absent in his personal presentation is the theatricality of his public work, which suggests a sophisticated system of operation, likely supported by the books in his library, and perhaps a personal philosophical treatise. This is a philosopher-torturer, with the practical detachment of a pig-butcher.
"Stop that," he says, "unless you want me to do it back."
I go still. Grandmother said I was her only pupil. Could this be why Apollonius wants it so bad? He knows Atlas is yet beyond him. The man's cold eyes search the burn on my face and continue to assess without yet coming to a conclusion. So he is humble, too, or at least experienced enough to have been wrong more than once before.
"Salve, Auloon," he says in formal high lingo.
"Salve, Aura," I reply.
"How did my brother die?" he asks,
abandoning the argot before it becomes laborious.
"Of course I have been told, but I hear you saw it with your own eyes."
"He walked to the dragon tomb. He died several steps short." He is quiet for a full minute.
"All men who live for their ancestors do. How long did he talk before he walked?"
"Too long."
He chuckles, Romulus to the end. "I hear my niece and nephew are on the Anihilo to talk alliance."
"Diomedes is. Serafina is in the desert."
He doesn't flinch. "Dead?"
"Yes, Atalantia demanded Ara participate."
"Did you see her corpse?"
"I saw her ripped in half by a rail slug. What remained was buried in the sand."
"Shadows and dust," he murmurs
without irony. "No grief, no laugh for the dead traitor."
"She did not betray the society. My father and brother did. I held no malice for Serafina. I would have liked to have known my kin."
He sighs and takes the Bologna razor from a pouch on his thigh and lays it between us.
"This, on the other hand, is filthy with the blood of Arja and Octavia."
"I do not believe a man like you should ask anyone to explain themselves."
"Ah, that's right. You've seen one of my forests. I'm sure you have an opinion. The 200 had many at first. None to my face, of course. They prefer smiles and innuendo."
"I remember you used to make my father laugh," I say. His eyes soften.
"Do you?
I wonder if he would laugh at your forests."
"No,"
he surprises me by saying.
"Brutus would call me a human stain. Anastasia would use far gentler a vocabulary. I'm sure you remember her bleeding heart."
"No, as a matter of fact." He searches my face as if trying to detect a lie.
She would say I am making more enemies with every man I impale. That is why I impale Martians, not Mercurians.
To create dissonance and demarcation between interloper and loyal subject, I reply pedantically.
So we've read some of the same books, I see. You want to play this game? Very well. I've only barbarians for company out here. How many lives did you end in the Iron Rain? Don't you have a kill count to mark on your breastplate?
It is impossible to reckon. Between 10 and 100.
Do you feel their deaths acutely?
Vaguely.
There it is.
He leans back.
Distance has sanitized war nearly as much as Stoneside's fucking ramblings. It has made it easy, romantic. I have no interest in sanitization nor romance. I apply scientific methods to produce psychological trauma in our enemies in order to create psychological casualties, to end their willingness to fight and shorten this war. That is my purpose.
There's a resentment in him, a hostility that seems intensely personal. I don't recall knowing him well enough to wound him. Or does he already know of Ajax's betrayal?
Enough digression. Why would you tell my men you are this Cato al Vitruvius? Did it amuse you?
Amuse me? What sort of nature do you think I possess?
A nature which is the product of your grandmother, the same nature she imparted to all her students. Answer the question.
So that's who the anger is for, the woman who gave him this role? I didn't trust your men, I say. Ajax tried to assassinate me twice. By his expression I see this is not news. I could not risk revealing my identity to anyone but you, for fear of him completing the task.
And you think I am trustworthy?
He asks. You were my father's best friend.
I am also Ajax's father.
He picks at his cuticles.
Do you mean to kill my son?
No. He doesn't believe me.
Do you even know why Ajax tried to kill you?
It goes back to childhood. He laughs.
It does indeed. She used to groom the both of you.
He leans forward.
Ajax is fucking Atalantia.
At first I thought I misheard, but it begins to make sense. Ajax is quiet when Atalantia kissed me, his territorial marking, his fear that I would replace him at his aunt's side.
You didn't know. Few do. She took my son as a paramour before he turned 16. She would reward him for the heads of gold blood traitors with sexual favours.
Did Magnus know?
Of his daughter's depravity, yes. Of its deeper depths, and my son's sexual enslavement to his remaining daughter.
He shrugs.
Magnus always had a selective conscience, especially with precious Atalantia.
And you just let it happen?
Ajax may have my DNA, but I was off fighting for my sovereign for half his life. When I returned, well, that boy is her creature to the bone now. Just as she intended. She and Arja always detested each other, you know. That Arja's boy is now her personal killing machine is her ultimate revenge.
Did Atalantia give the order to kill me?
I doubt it. To do so would be to admit to herself that she cannot tame you,
he says.
She would not lose such a prize as you lightly. But if she did give the order, she would not tell me.
He pulls a fig from a bag and pops it into his mouth, offering me one. I take three.
So long as Ajax is ruled by his heart and cock, there will be no place for the boy who used to make him feel small. Knowing this, you still claim no intent on his life.
It changes nothing, I reply. I am here for the people of the society, for Kalindora, for my Praetorians. I will not let them burn as hostages of the enemy. I know an assault is pending on Heliopolis. I assume Darrow is besieged there. He watches me without speaking for some time.
You look very much like your mother when you feign nobility, you know.
He ponders over a fig.
It won't be an assault. I have recently concluded field testing of a new chemical weapon. Atalantia is intent on releasing it, so she does not destroy Heliopolis's wealth before taking it as her own. The Master Maker will watch as his city eats itself.
What does the chemical do?
Omnicide.
I see it already. A catalogue of horrors racks Kalindora's face. I see her convulsing and vomiting blood. I see buboes bubbling on her skin. I see the skin melting away. I did not know until this moment how much I would do to stop that. She is a killer, but the weariness I saw in her eyes, the way she looked at me when the Praetorians came down, it was something close to pride. I can't let her die, or Rhone, or my Praetorians, or any of the loyal subjects caught between two giants. Too many lives have already been spent too easily by people who should know better. Did you learn omnicide in the Kuiper? I ask.
No, I learned to outsource.
Cryptic. You mentioned a master maker.
Ah, yes, your old friend Glirastes. He's no longer just an artificer. He's proven himself a traitor. He abetted the enemy's use of the storm gods. I don't believe it. Trust me when I say men do strange things out of fear. Now he will die with them, and his precious city.
He does not sound happy about the last part.
Now, where are my manners? Are you hungry for a real meal? In the morning we'll be departing for the Anihilo, but I'm sure Atalantia will cause a fuss if I haven't fed you.
He fetches a bowl of fresh bread and two boiled pieces of meat. What is this? I ask as I chew.
What does it taste like?
Bat?
Well, there you have it.
He watches with a strange expression as I eat. It is oddly civilized, this conversation, considering his men only just tortured me. He still has not tendered an apology, nor do I expect he ever will. You do not seem to advocate for Atalantia's plan, I test.
I have no tolerance for rebels. But this planet did not rebel, it was conquered. I think you would agree it is a strategic mistake to confuse the two and to cede the moral high ground to the enemy when we've only just reclaimed it. If we kill 20 million, will anyone remember the Reaper Storm?
Yet you do not contradict Atalantia.
He laughs. I am a soldier. Soldiers follow orders.
She gives you autonomy. Can't you infiltrate the city, bring down their shields from the inside?
No. My men inside are dead. The Howlers know counter-espionage all too well, and the Loyalists are as neutered as a Logos.
That puts me in a unique position as I ponder playing yet another stupid game. He grows suspicious. If anything, undermining Atalantia's plan puts him on guard. I want him at ease. Get him talking about himself, about something he likes. I try his mother, Gaia, and tell him of my time with her, but he replies very little and grows somewhat defensive. The figurines, they're the only thing here without utility. I stand and approach them. The detailing is impressive, as is the variety of subject. There are a few golds, but most a low colour. I pick up one of a red woman.
That one is called Daedra, he explains. We became familiar on the outskirts of Olympia. Tough woman.
For a red?
Tough woman.
Are they trophies?
He looks insulted as he joins me.
They are meditation totems. Each is for a human who preyed upon my prejudices. Deirdre seemed harmless, kind, stupid. She brought my men figs and bread every day for a week, until her figs were laced with a nerve agent. 104 men dead, because I could not see her for what she was.
A zealot?
A soldier, he corrects.
I'm still in his peripheral vision. I take a step back and look at the figures with a frown. Where's Darrow? Surely he's fooled you a few times.
It's a work in progress. I did the legs before I met him, but how can you understand a man at war with himself?
He turns his back to me to reach toward the far end of the nook, clenching Deirdre in my hand, I ready to swing at the nerve packet located behind his left ear.
If you strike me, I suggest you have a plan.
He doesn't turn around to defend himself. It throws me off guard.
I assume you saw my escape map. The tunnels can be tricky, and memory for us mere mortals is fleeting.
He turns around and leans against the wall.
It won't work, you know. Me as your Trojan horse.
It might.
Let's say you did manage to subdue me. Possible, given your youth, but not probable, given your state and my vocation. You would then have to free the Arcosians. Use my escape map to that blasted labyrinth. Evade my men, flee across the desert, pray Darrow lets you inside Heliopolis. Gamble that your thin ruse of Cato or Vitruvius holds, and then kill the most dangerous man alive.
I don't intend on killing him.
And the rest?
Prescient.
Is it for auctoritas? Glory? To prove you are the heir?
No.
Revenge, then?
No.
Humanitarian concern for your men? Or maybe you fancy the love knight, he mocks. Men will do strange things out of fear, but for love, well, death is hardly the limit.
Who are we if we kill a city that did not rebel? I ask.
Interesting. An idealist. Don't fret, it's a temporary condition.
He actually smiles.
They're guarding the wall and the shield generator with an army of veterans, you know. Howlers abound.
Predictable targets.
What is your target, then?
Glorastes.
He is a traitor.
I can turn him back. He goes quiet, thinking. Why are you not calling your men? I ask.
Because I have lived off the contributions of this planet. They have sheltered me and my men. They have fed us. They have informed for us. They have spied and died for us. Not the high colors. They turned their backs like craven, but the low, the mid, those with barely anything to their name, because this is not Mars. This is Mercury. If we just let them burn, what is the point of this?
He thrusts a finger to his scar.
Furthermore, for 2 weeks my men have failed to get me inside Heliopolis. What will you do with Glerastes?
I will know once I see the tools available. But I imagine Darrow knows an attack is coming, and so it likely will be necessary to hoist him on his own petard.
The chances of it working are
minute. He nods to himself.
Obviously my men can't know. Make it look real. Kill them if you must. They know their duty.
He waits for me to hit him.
Well, let's see how good the pupil of Bellona, Octavia and Aja really is.
Is Atlas really going to be a willing participant after what he's done to Darrow's men? You know Darrow will kill you.
Pulvis et umbra sumus. One servant for 20 million citizens is easy math. You have 5 days until the chemical attack, though that may change with my capture.
His conviction makes me doubt myself.
Don't balk now.
He punches me in the nose, breaking it.
Blood spurts out. Do it.
He hits me again, and I charge him. He ducks under me and tries to strip my left leg to take me to the floor in a cravat central pivot.
Cassius loved that one.
I counter by leaving my feet and rolling over his back, looping one arm under his right armpit as I go, and wrapping my other arm around his neck as I use my central rotation to roll onto my back with his spine against my stomach. He has a small window to reach his boot knife, but he lets it pass. I loop my arms over his left shoulder and under his right armpit, pinning his right arm up in a salute. I pin his left arm to his side by wrapping both my legs around it and his rib cage and interlocking my ankles. He grunts there, pinned in a brachial choke. His legs kick as I constrict the blood flow to his head, but not even an obsidian could muscle his way out of this. I stare at the doorway as his feet scrabble against the floor. No Gorgons come to check on their leader. There is never any need. When he is unconscious, I release my hold and stand over him, perplexed. I haven't time to understand it. Every moment wasted will make discovery surer. I take the tack net from his weapon's nook and shoot it at his body. It ensnares him. I take his haster from the wall. My Bellona blade lies in the dirt. I almost convince myself that I can bring it with me, but where I'm going I might as well wear my mother's ring. I jump and hide the razor in a cleft in the rock, and use his boot knife to give myself a shallow wound just above the heart. I smear the blood all over my face and neck. The tunnel is dark and empty. Fear's men are still busy with their meal. I move as fast as I can back to the prisoner's room, my bare feet silent on the stone. Two of the Gorgons sit on the floor playing dice when I round the corner. From his place on the wall, Alexander sees me fill the tunnel.
"I want to see the Fear Knight," he cries to the Gorgons.
The guards turn to look at him. I sprint toward them. Aja's lessons guide me. Against a single individual, you can make a non-lethal takedown with relative consistency, but two individuals, even of a lower genus, reduce your chances by 70%. I could kill the two Gorgons with two neat thrusts, but I make it sloppy, as if I've never held a razor. As they turn back at the sound of my feet, I slash half the head off the first man like I'm felling a tree. The blade passes through him as if he weren't even there, and carries on into the second man's throat, one of Cassius's favourite moves against the shoddy armour common in the belt. Then, clumsily, the razor goes into the cave wall. Flopping to the ground, the second man stares up with wide eyes, trying to talk, but I made sure my clumsiness severed his windpipe. I hack at him a second time, a third. Then I give a quiet sob and fall to my knees, covered in blood.
"Gory damn!"
Alexander breathes. He kicks the other knights awake.
"Cato! Cato! Look at me!"
I look up at him, wide-eyed.
"Did anyone see you coming here?"
I shake my head.
"There's keys on their bodies. Unlatch us, and we can help you. Front chest pocket, that's it."
With shaking hands, I free them.
"Cato, have you ever used a razor before?"
Alexander watches the bloody blade in my shaking hands. I pretend not to be able to think. Finally, I shake my head and give him the blade. Practiced hands strip the bodies of their night optics, their sidearms, two grenades, and a single long rifle.
"Tell me what happened. Where is the Fear Knight?"
I show them. The professional soldiers miss nothing. In 30 seconds we have the map, the go-bag, a glow lamp, and the Fear Knight's data pad. For a moment I think they'll discover Cassius's razor too, but Drusilla only takes a wolf pelt from the wall. She hands it to Alexander.
"You've a promise to keep," she tells him.
He holds the pelt for a quiet moment and looks as if he's going to weep. Then he throws it over his shoulders and binds it to his tattered shirt. Ignatius grins as he finds Stims in the Fear Knight's go-bag a moment later. They each shoot a vial into their necks. The zeal of the drug gives their tortured bodies new life, but it won't last long. Correctly deducing that our breakout will soon be noticed, Alexander dispatches Drusilla and Crastus to delay the pursuit.
"How did you get back here?" Ignatius asks. "Why were you in his room?"
"He was being kind to me," I say. "He wanted me to trick you into...
"Doesn't matter, Ignatius," Alexander says. "We have to move."
"We're trapped," I fret. "They're going to impale us."
"No."
He holds up the map.
"This is a back door. We knew we had to have one. We can escape. We are trained for this, Cato. I know you're not, but if you keep up with us, we will keep you alive." "Alexander, we can't afford to be slowed down," Ignatius says. "He's a loyalist anyway. He can't... "If we get Atlas to the Sovereign, what he has in his head will save millions," Alexander snaps. "This loyalist could have just won the war, and you want to leave him?" "He won't talk. He doesn't need to."
What does he mean by that? Ignatius isn't convinced.
"I don't trust him." "Darrow will question him later," Alexander says.
Ignatius nods.
"You ever seen one of these?" Alexander asks me, holding up a stim vial and looking at my burn.
"What is it?" I ask.
"It'll make you fly, good man."
He tilts my neck and injects it.
"How do you feel?"
The military-grade neurotransmitter races through my veins like a galloping destria, filling me with manic energy and dulling the communication of pain receptors in my brain. For the first time in weeks, my face doesn't feel like it's falling apart. There's a rumbling groan from up the tunnel. Drusilla and Crastus return, stone-faced.
"Armory was too well guarded, so we hit the commissary. They'll be coming soon as they clear the rubble. We have 30 seconds at best."
Alexander smiles.
"Then we have a head start, good men."
He slaps my shoulder and shoves one of the scorchers into my hands.
"On me!"